Tell me what you plan to do with that one wild and precious life. What have you chosen to do with your life? As many of you know, before I became a minister, I taught acting for about 30 years. Teaching acting gave me the opportunity to spend my days with young adults between the ages of about 18 and 26. It gave me the opportunity to live with them at that edge of growing and learning. It could be that time that our own children are into today. It's a time of huge potential, as one's life is entirely open and for the most part untested. So hopes and dreams and ambitions are pure, able to soar freely. And that question at the end of Mary Oliver's poem the poem is frontmost in one's mind. What will I do with this one wild and precious life? Now, perhaps if one is at that age, one doesn't see or appreciate just how extraordinarily precious that life is. Looking up from a place down the lifeline of age and experience, we have a different lens than young adults do. And from this place of age and experience, we are both blessed and perhaps cursed with the choices that we have made or not made, and the experiential wisdom to know that the choices we make are not always from a place of personal freedom, not always made from a position of personal power, not always from our own initiative. We know that who we are, our identity, and what we do is often a response to the times that we live in. Some of the influences on us when we make our choices can be cultural or societal pressures, such as political or religious wars, economic or environmental depression, immigration or migration forces, or personal influences such as illness, perhaps of our own or someone close to us, the death of someone that we love and admire, or travel, education, or work. The choices we make with our one and precious life are influenced by more than one pressure, more than one circumstance. And those choices, well, we make millions of them every day, at least hundreds. Now, the one thing I most loved as a teacher of young adults was that opportunity to open doors for their questing hearts and minds. Most of my students had just left home, and they were beginning to ask themselves who they were when they weren't the son of or the daughter of. Many had also moved away from home, cities, even countries, and they were seeing with that first comparison sight, seeing that the way they had grown up wasn't necessarily the only right way. Suddenly, just at that moment when their questions of identity were surfacing, they were seeing that there were many, many different perspectives and cultures that were just as valid as the ones that they had grown up in. Now, one part of that identity question that many of these young people were asking was, what does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be a man in this postmodern world? Now, I'm talking here about gender identity, not sexual identity, not who one is sexually attracted to, but how one experiences and understands themselves as a man or as a woman. The identity piece is hugely influenced by the culture that we live in. In northern first world culture, up to about the 1960s or thereabouts, the gender roles were pretty clear. And so the choices that one made in one's life were also pretty clear. There were expectations. Boys wore blue, and were active, worked on cars, went to war, worked to support a family until retirement. And then the world went a little topsy-turvy, and the gender lines began to blur. The women's movement empowered women. Men and women now worked full-time outside the home, and expectations changed. Divorce rose and changed the family structure. On one side, men expected to be equal partners in raising their families. On the other side, many more women were raising families alone. Boys were growing up without fathers as role models. Men were being caught in the shoulder of a cultural change. They needed to be tough and soft, sensitive and nurturing, aggressive and dominating. They were told women liked a sensitive man who could talk about his feelings. And they were told that women liked a man who was strong and in charge. And to many men, these were a confusing conflict of mixed messages. Now, every term, I would ask my students, what was the one definitive, influential, life-changing film? It helped me get to know who they were. And every term, one young man said, "Fight Club." And all the other young men in the room nodded. Fight Club. It doesn't sound like the kind of film that would attract me. A woman, a sensitive, nonviolent, positive kind of female. But I was intrigued, because I saw that this movie had a life-changing story for these young men. And so I watched it. How many here have watched it? Okay, so you'll know what I'm talking about. For those that don't, here's the story. It's the story of a young man. Jack is the model of the indentured servant, working for a mindless and immoral corporation, with nothing happening in his life but shopping at IKEA to create a stylish and comfortable apartment. And Jack cannot sleep. He is desperately lost, desperately disconnected from himself, frozen and isolated. He goes to the doctor for sleeping pills, but the doctor refuses to give them to him. Instead, he mockingly suggests that Jack should check out the testicular cancer support group if he wants to see real pain. There, our lost young man, pretending to have testicular cancer, finds men in this support group who he can express his pain with for the first time. The first time in his life. So he becomes a support group junkie. He joins support groups for lymphoma, tuberculosis, bowel cancer, etc. Because it was in these groups that there were people who really listened to him. And he felt safe. And he could let his pain out. Now, when his apartment blows up, he moves in with a very attractive, in that rebel who doesn't care way, Tyler Durden. Tyler is everything that Jack is not. He's cynical, independent, strong, instinctual. Tyler is the social critic, the anarchist. Tyler does what Tyler wants. Well, together, Jack and Tyler, they start Fight Club, a support group of sorts for men who live meaningless lives, who are disconnected from themselves. In Fight Club, men fight each other in order to feel connected. It's brutal and bloody and ugly, but it is also revitalizing, this fierce, visceral encounter with another man, it literally brings them back to themselves, brings them back to life. It's a kind of salvation. And then, of course, it begins to go too far. Tyler Durden begins to create a new project called Project Mayhem, whose semi-secret goal is the destruction of all the credit card companies in order to wipe clean the collective debt and so start fresh again. And Tyler becomes a man with no conscience. He's all instinct and impulse without care of consequence. He uses people without scruples. He destroys on whim. And now, the spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the film, there is a twist, but I can't keep going unless I tell it to you. When Jack, our narrator, confronts Tyler about this Project Mayhem, he discovers that this Tyler is actually his alter ego. And if he is to stop Tyler from his escalation into violence, Jack must find a way to integrate Tyler back into his own identity. Fight Club is about, for the most part, young white men today. Young white men who are critically disconnected from who they are. They may not even be aware of it yet. They may not be aware that they're seeking wholeness through the integration of their psyches. The men in this story are struggling to integrate the archetype of the hunter with the archetype of the gatherer, the untamed and the tamed, the civilized and the uncivilized. And they are prevented from finding their own wholeness by fear and by comfort. They are frozen in a fear of debt, a fear of their own frustrations, fear of their internalized violence, fear of who they have become. Tyler says, "Do you know what a duvet is?" "It's a comforter," says Jack. Tyler, "It's a blanket, just a blanket." "Now, why do guys like you and me know what a duvet is? Is this essential to our survival in this hunter-gatherer sense of the word?" "No. What are we then?" Jack answers. "Consumers?" "Right," says Tyler. "We are consumers. We are the byproducts of a lifestyle obsession. Murder, crime, poverty, these things don't concern me. What concerns me are celebrity magazines, television with 500 channels, some guy's name on my underwear, Rogaine, Viagra, Olestra." Unquote. That comfortable apartment, furnished with IKEA products, has a numbing comfort. Tyler says, "Then you're trapped in your lovely nest, and the things you used to own, now they own you." It is a comfort that is antithetical to the essence of survival. One part of this story is about how men have lost their identity to a meaningless consumer world. Another critique is the question of what happens to young men who are growing up without male models, fathers, father figures, men to show them how to be men. The narrator, Jack, says, "My dad? Don't know where he is. Only knew him for 6 years. Then he ran off to a new city and married another woman and had more kids. Every 6 years, new city, new family. Yeah, he was setting up franchises." Tyler smiles and snorts and shakes his head and says, "Uh-huh. We're a generation of men raised by women. Look what it's done to you." Ouch. 43% of boys in the United States did not grow up with a father in their home. What does that mean to our young boys and young men? A boy's search for self starts with his father. Without a father or a father figure, most boys have a harder time knowing who they are and where they came from. As men, they often have difficulty taking initiative and demonstrating leadership, and they get a distorted view of sex and a sense of incompleteness. Something is wrong. According to the U.S. National Center for Educational Statistics, boys are 30% more likely than girls to drop out of school. And when it comes to grades, more outperform boys in elementary, secondary, high school, college, and even graduate school. And boys are 4 to 5 times more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD. My opinion, and this is only my opinion, but it is based on my experience of 30 years of teaching young men, that we are in the midst of an epidemic of sorts, a societal crisis. And I don't have the answers, but I know that we do have a problem. And it's complicated, and it's no one's fault, and I especially want to say to single mothers, of which I am one, that it is not the fault of single mothers who are doing their utmost to raise good young men. It is a cross-cultural, multi-layered societal situation. Our boys are in the center of a huge redefinition of what it means to be men. And perhaps it is not dissimilar to the challenge of growth that women faced in the mid-1900s. We must pay attention to our young men, our boys. We must notice that they are going through this, and we must be very careful with our criticisms and look deeper. What we can do is encourage and support young men, all men, to struggle and fight to reclaim their identity. And I do trust that they will. The character Tyler, now think Brad Pitt in all his bad boy glory, he says this, and I've edited it slightly for language. He says, "I see in Fight Club the strongest and smartest men who've ever lived. I see all this potential, and I see squandering. Damn it, an entire generation pumping gas waiting tables, slaves with white collars. Advertising has us chasing cars and clothes, working jobs we hate so we can buy what we don't need. We're the middle children of history, man. No purpose or place. We have no great war, no great depression. Our great war's a spiritual war. Our great depression is our lives. We've all been raised on television to believe that one day we're all going to be millionaires and movie gods and rock stars, but we're not. We won't. And we're slowly learning that fact. And we're very, very pissed off." To quote one young man's response to this movie, he said, "To really understand and accept what's happening inside you, it takes getting in touch with the part of you that people tried to kill, even before you could speak. When you knew you wanted to cry and rage, but you were told that it wasn't okay. You had to sublimate that to exist in this world. So the problem is trying to get back to it. But they've had you sublimated so long that you don't even know what the problem is anymore. The movie didn't solve anything for me. It just reconfirmed my ideas that society is really wrong." Young men today, and although this film was made about 15 years ago, it's still freshly, painfully relevant. One only needs to turn on the news and to hear the stories of desperate and confused young men lashing out with guns or knives, killing innocent people like we heard this weekend. Young men today are in crisis, and they don't need movie stars or porn stars or evangelists or even mothers or girlfriends telling them who they ought to be. According to Tyler, men have got to let go and know. Just know who they are. Know themselves in their core and own it. If it was put in Buddhist terms, you got to detach from thinking that you have control over anything and let go of that fear in particular. Let go of the comfort. Let go of the fear of death. Let go of the fear of being not enough. Let go and seize that one and precious life that is yours. At the intersection of letting go of fear and seizing hold of life is the message of both redemption and salvation that is the story for Fight Club. Thank you.